Faith blind. What is that? Paul's got a little case of faith blindness. Faith blindness. He might have faith blindness too. I don't know. There is such a thing, right? Yeah. So you've heard of blind faith, right? And you could probably hear a good sermon on blind faith today. Just walk down the street. There's probably a lot of churches today that are preaching a sermon about blind faith. This is the lectionary text today, and it's just it lends itself to the obvious wondering about blind faith. It's kind of like, one way of saying it would be, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. That's one way that I think of blind faith. It's just like, I don't know where I'm going, but I know that God's driving, so take me there. I'm on board. This train is bound for glory, and I'm riding. I don't know where I'm going. I have no idea. Thank God I'm not in charge. Thank God I'm not driving. But so blind faith, stepping out on nothing and landing on the promises of God. You see, I've preached the sermon on blind faith a few times. I've got it in my repertoire. But so this is me today. You know, I'm having one of those, and you guys know me, sometimes I just like to take it and turn it on its side or upside down even sometimes. I wonder what faith blind is. I know what blind faith is. I was reading this story about Paul, and it occurs to me that he's got a serious issue. He comes to faith, and he experiences blindness. Maybe it's momentary. Maybe it's a temporary condition. It'll get better with time. It seems to. We know Paul's story. So you open this book of Acts, which, by the way, is volume 2 of Luke. So we spent several weeks reading Luke's gospel through Lent and up to Easter. So today we open up volume 2. It's the Acts of the Disciples, right? So Luke is the gospel, and it's, you could say it's the Acts of Jesus and the Spirit and his gospel preaching and teaching. And Acts is the Acts of the Disciples and the Apostles and also the work of the Holy Spirit. It's all throughout here. And we get 9 chapters into this account of all the things that are going on in the early church. The Spirit is at work. People are believing. But there's this guy named Saul. And I love the way the opening verse gives us, meanwhile, Saul still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord. If I look back in chapter 8. There's another account of Saul. It's kind of the beginning. That day a severe persecution began against the church in Jerusalem, and all except the apostles were scattered throughout the countryside of Judea and Samaria. Devout men buried Stephen, who was martyred, made loud lamentation over him. But Saul was ravaging the church by entering house after house and dragging off both men and women. He committed them to prison. I've always thought it was kind of humorous that Paul, in his earlier life as Saul, had this very inclusive vision of persecution. Both men and women. It says it twice right there, and it says here in chapter 9. He was breathing threats against both men and women. It was in his lifeblood to make sure the whole church, right? Neither male nor female, neither Jew nor Greek. You know, he said famously in his letter to the Galatians, he wants them all. And at this point, it's murderous threats, and he really, he's just quite a threat to this new movement, the People of the Way, by the way, right? Isn't that an interesting name? He found any who belonged to the Way, with a capital W. That's what they called this early movement. A couple chapters later in 1126, look it up sometime, Acts 1126, he's in Antioch, and it says there that that's the first place where this early movement, where they were known as Christians, right? So there's no such thing as a Christian yet. It's people of the way. So what is faith blind? Well, Paul has this experience, and he hears this voice, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? And his first question out of his mouth is, who are you? Who are you? The men around him, they're speechless. They hear the voice, but they don't see where it's coming from. Saul got up from the ground, and though his eyes were open, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus. For 3 days he was without sight, and neither ate nor drank. I think of faith blind is the experience we have early on when we discover something new. And it's all we can do. We have new eyes. We have a new way of seeing. And for some of us, it just means we're totally dependent. That's all we can think about. We live, breathe, and we think this new thing. Here's a stupid example, but maybe it's an iPhone. You ever see anybody with a new iPhone? Well, I resisted it for a long time. I finally got one, and now, man, it's awesome. Yeah, this is faith blind. This is iPhone blind. I'm so obsessed with this new thing. It's quite a gadget. And television. Oh, tunnel vision. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's like all you can see. Well, if you've ever met a new Christian, a new convert to the church, it's really quite inspiring to be around them. But there's a certain element of faith blindness. It's all, they can barely see the world. They're so wrapped up in what's new about their world. Their world has been rocked and turned on its side. There's an interesting phrase in the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's read at almost every AA meeting. If you ever wander into an AA meeting, God bless you. If you need it, then it could be the best thing that ever happened to you. But they read this every time they get together. It's called How It Works. So it's an invitation to people to sort of try this new way of life, this path, this way of living sober and trying to get your life together. And it says in there, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. Isn't that awesome? Can you imagine sitting in your first meeting ever and you're trying to change your life, you're trying to rid yourself of this horrible addiction, and you hear this, our stories disclose in a general way. That means not all our stories are the same. A lot of them have a similar plot line, and it goes, and then there's something that comes out. But they disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. What that says to me is that everybody has a before and an after story. Think about that. Everybody has a before and an after story. And if you're sitting there and you're thinking, I don't know if I have a before and an after story. Before I was married, after I was married. Before I was divorced, after I was divorced. And maybe you're fortunate if you're sitting there, I don't think I have a before and an after story. That's because you're still in your before. Thank God for that. And I'm sorry. Because something's going to come down the road eventually. And this before is going to be your after. And that's good news and that's hard news sometimes, right? Because I'm not what I used to be. I love the name. I didn't know Judith was going to be playing that song. What was the name of that the prelude? Lord, I know I've been changed. Lord, I know I've been changed. And it reminds me that I can just hear the black preacher. I ain't what I'm going to be, but thank God I ain't what I used to be. I'm somewhere in between. Somewhere in the timeline of my story, I'm somewhere in the before, the what I used to be like, the what happened, and the what I'm like now. Somewhere in my lifeline, that story is unraveling and being told. So Paul,
there should be what I'm going to be too.
And what I'm going to be, exactly. So, because we're always on the road to becoming something else, thank God. That's part of our faith story, right? The process of death and resurrection, life, death, and resurrection, that we're always becoming something new. Maybe better. Maybe it's just new. I'm not sure yet with Paul. Is he better? Probably. I mean, he's not breathing threats. That's pretty bad. And murderous ravaging of the church. So there are a lot of people who are probably thankful that Paul ain't what he used to be. They're probably still wondering, what's he going to be? And cautiously wondering, right, what's he going to be? But there's this moment in that before, during, and after of what we call, what I'm calling faith blind. And think about that for Paul. There are a couple of things about that. One is, he's asking the question, who are you, Lord? That's a good place to be. To ask the question, who are you, Lord? That's a very faithful place to be. He's heard the voice. It knocked him off his horse. There's no horse in this story, but some famous painter painted it. And Paul knocked off his horse. It's beautiful. And he's got this moment. He hears the voice, and he doesn't know what it is. It's new to him. It's so new, he has to ask, who are you, Lord? The story is told of St. Francis of Assisi that he would pray all night sometimes. And the content of his prayer was simply to ask, who are you, Lord? He was faith blind. He had those moments, and that's all he knew to do in his prayer life was to ask the question, who are you, Lord? And then wait for the answer. That's the hard part. Wait for the answer. And in his blindness, his companions on the way are speechless. Paul gets up. He can't see, even though his eyes are open. And this has always been a mystery to me, right? We say, you know, I saw the light. Right? I saw the light. No more darkness. Thanks be to God. I saw. But Paul saw the light, and then he can't see anything else. Faith blind. His world has been turned on its side so radically that he needs time to adjust. It's like letting your eyes adjust to the darkness or the light. Walking out of a movie theater in the middle of the day, and it's bright all of a sudden. It's like, right? It's blind. There's a moment of faith blindness where he has to let his eyes adjust and begin to see the world through these new eyes. So what does he do in the meantime? Those of us who know Paul and have studied Paul think that this might be the only time in his life where he depended on other people. He's a very confident, self-assured person, Paul is. We probably wouldn't be here today if he hadn't been that kind of person, because he is almost single-handedly responsible for spreading the Christian gospel to the rest of the world, right? But he depended on other people for this moment. He had to walk in the darkness, and he had to be led by the hand by other people who could see the way. So maybe that's just part of the process for us. When we're on our way to becoming, we're not what we used to be, and we're not quite yet what we're going to be. But in the meantime, I'm going to get by with a little help from my friends, to borrow a phrase, right? Thank you. I'll get there, but I need your help. I'll get there, but I'll need your help. And the good news about this faith-blind experience is that we have to let go of the way we used to look at the world. And thank God that Paul doesn't see the world the way he used to, breathing threats, seeing this new religion as a threat to his way of life. Instead, he is convicted from inside out that this Jesus thing is serious, and that these people of the way walk in a way that is life-giving and life-changing. And he begins to incorporate that into his own life and practice. And the last thing we get here about Paul is that he neither ate nor drank for 3 days. Do you know what that's about? Maybe his doctor sent him home with instructions. Don't eat or drink for 3 days. I don't think so. Side effects may include. I think Paul was a person of discipline and prayer. And that's how he responds to faith blindness, is to just implement and do what he knows to do. I'm going to fast and I'm going to pray for 3 days. It was a way of life for him to take his own faith. He was He was deeply steeped in Judaism. He was I'm not going to say he's a Pharisee. I can't remember what sect he was part of, but he was a renowned teacher of his faith, and he may have been a rabbi, but anyway, he knew all these things about his own faith experience. And so when he was in this moment of faith blindness, he did what he knew what to do. What the only thing he knew to do was to fast and to pray, to use the disciplines that he had been raised with and had shaped him. And that's what he knew to do. They say, and I remember hearing this kind of after 9/11, and how people just kind of filled churches. And you guys probably filled this church after 9/11. Somebody said, church or ritual holds us when we can't hold ourselves. And people came back to church after 9/11 because they didn't know what else to do. They just knew that they could show up in a place and let the traditions and the faith hold them when they couldn't hold anything themselves. That's Paul's faith blindness moment here. He's going to be held by his tradition. And so he's going to fast and he's going to pray. He's going to lean on other people. And he's going to let God answer his question over time. Who are you, Lord? Thanks be to God.